Where the shot went, he had no idea. He heard no noise of its passage. Through the roof, Ryan felt a vibration. From down on the street in front of the garage came a dull, heavy thump, followed by cheers and shouts in a language he couldn't make out. He guessed it was Spanish. The muties seemed to have contrived a battering ram and were having a go at the doors. They seemed pretty sturdy, and anyway, Ryan was going to have to let his friends below deal with the problem, at least until he got the nearby rooftops clean. He reared and rolled back into a sitting position, knees up. He brought the stire to his shoulder, bracing his elbows against the insides of his knees, snugged the butt plate tight to his shoulder's hollow, welded his right cheek to the stock, and peered through the scope with his single eye. The blaster man who had shot at him was fumblingly spilling powder from a horn, an actual cow horn by the look of it, down the barrel of his musket. He was shaking so much he was pouring most of the black grains on his hand, which was twined about with strange yellow growths or veins. Ryan lined the crosshairs up on the center of his chest and squeezed. The stire kicked back against his shoulder. He worked the bolt with quick, calm efficiency as the barrel rose. Another round, head-stamped 7.62mm NATO, was chambered and ready to go when the long, slim barrel came back down online. The musketeer was nowhere in sight. His companion, whose skin hung loose on his small, skinny frame in flaps, was staring down with puzzled bloodhound eyes at what was probably him. Belatedly, he caught hold of the notion that he might be in some danger here. Instead of simply dropping flat, he started to turn to bolt. Ryan shot him through and through, right side to left, and dropped him like a deer. Ryan felt another shiver of vibration through his tailbone, heard a scrape from right behind. He knew full auto blaster fire when he heard it. He threw himself sideways, clumsily bringing the long rifle around and up to aim more or less at the armorer, who stood grinning down at him through his wire-rimmed specs from the shade of his hat brim.
Scraped off a couple muties coming up the wall.
What are you doing up here? You're supposed
You're
to be-
You're welcome for saving your lean ass. Figured you'd need some backup.
JB walked to the front of the garage and leaned out over the parapet.
Hey, boys, up here!
JB ducked back down as return shots cracked from the street. Then he rocked back over the parapet and let the rest of his magazine go in a long spray. He sat out of sight to wait out the return fire from the street, waving his stubby machine pistol in the air with its heavy bolt locked back to cool it.
Down to 3 mags. Way too few to be hosing them blind through the door.
Right.
The flash of annoyance Ryan had felt at his old friend was already forgotten. The companions followed Ryan's lead, not his commands. JB had spotted a weakness in their deployment and acted promptly on his own initiative to correct it. It had been a good call. That meant they all got to live a little longer. They were a team, which had always been their mainstay. For what it was worth now.
This is maybe not so good, Ryan. Street right out in front is clean, but you can bet your last meal the houses around here are swarming with the bastards. And I can see them all over the streets surrounding. There must be a couple hundred of them out there.
Ryan lay on his back, gazed up toward the sun, knowing enough not to look directly at it. It still rode high in the sky. There was plenty of daylight left.
Think we'll make it until sundown?
Nah, not that it'd make a spit of difference. These bastards are taking it personal. If they didn't have their black little hearts bent on seeing the color of our insides, they'd have cut stick and pulled out long since from the hurt we've laid on them.
How about making a run for it?
They blocked us once, they might do it again. Still, it's probably our one and only shot. Even if it likely doesn't mean anything but the difference between getting chilled moving and getting chilled standing still. Doc says the muties keep hollering something about a holy child. It's like their war cry. Don't know what damn good that does us, but there it is. Whoa, what's that?
Earthquake. That last was a wall coming down. Maybe a whole house.
Now we know why such a neat little ville has big piles of rubble lying about the bastard alleys. Damn tremors must come frequent enough to keep the locals rebuilding and repairing, not leaving much time to worry about cleaning up all the wreckage.
Ryan stuck his head up again, looking around. He could see nothing, but he could sense movement around them. The muties, he knew, were preparing another onslaught. Then Ryan frowned.
Hold it. JB, you hear something?
Other than my pulse going like a scared horse down a flight of stairs? Dark night. I think I hear...
Motors. Wags. Maybe a big bike. Coming this way.
Damn. Browning M2 50 caliber machine gun. Sweetest music these ears ever did hear. Called a Mod Deuce pre-dark.
From around them came a sensation of stirring, like rats in walls.
Seems like our friends have gotten tired of playing and are taking their toys and heading home.
JB walked to the open hatch.
Hey, down there! Looks like our bacon's saved. Cavalry's coming.
And precisely what makes you think they're on our side?
There's an old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
And we know what a steaming load that one is. Okay, Millie, you win. But the guys we know want to cut us up and maybe eat us are going away, which even a pessimistic cuss like you has to admit is a positive development.
What was that you called me? Cuss? It was distinctly cuss, and Ryan will back me up on that.
Leave me out of this.
Besides, you know I never stoop to foul fucking language, Millie.
We can always polish our Baron's jester routines later if we happen to live. Now let's all pipe down, hunker down, get ready to play whatever hand's dealt us next.
Ryan and JB crouched behind the roof parapet, watching the streets below and surrounding their hideout.
Whoever these folks are, they sure aren't low on ammo.
The marauders seemed to have no appetite for hanging around and getting better acquainted with the interlopers. They began streaming openly along the streets, away from the approaching gunfire and motor sounds. A ragged, starved-looking band of muties, and apparently normal humans, mixed together indiscriminately. What might cause the norms and muties to cooperate like this, Ryan had no idea. There was nothing impossible about it, of course. It was just that the hostility between norms and muties was usually so bitter and deeply ingrained that it was rare for them to coexist without bloodshed, much less to fight side by side. He glanced at his old friend. JB looked back at him, shook his head, pulling down the corners of his mouth. Neither of them felt a reflex hatred of muties, obviously. Christy Roth was a mutie herself, albeit a beautiful one, even to norm eyes. But Ryan, having all his life heard the cliché about having an itchy trigger finger, was actually feeling a tingle in that digit here and now, what with a river of potential targets flowing by right under their chins. He could tell the armorer felt the same way. But the raiders were headed the right direction, away, and showing no further disposition to bother them. Shooting at them would serve no useful purpose. At best, it would waste scarce ammo. At worst, it would draw return fire from the retreating raiders. Better to leave well enough alone. The fugitive flow passed, and eventually ended. At the street's far end, a very different procession appeared. Men in tan uniforms advanced steadily, long blasters ready in patrol position. They were dark-skinned, dark-haired, not very tall, resembling the human raiders who accompanied the muties, but better clothed, armed, and fed. Behind them cruised a heavy truck with a fabric-covered bed and a welded-together-looking mount for the big Browning machine gun behind the cab. And out in front of it rolled an outlandish apparition. A tall, copper-skinned youth wearing a feathered headdress, a green loincloth, an odd sort of golden harness over his broad chest and shoulders, and armor braces on forearms and lower legs, riding a big, blatting, outlaw-style motorcycle.
What do you make of that?
Beats me.
From a house across the street from their perch, and a couple of doors toward the well-armed column, a skinny mutie with an outsized asymmetric head bolted. He seemed to have no better plan in mind than to get away as quickly as possible, running balls out right down the middle of the dirt lane, elbows pumping. It wasn't a good enough plan. The bizarre feathered rider raised his right forearm. A pale red beam snapped from it. It struck the fleeing mutie between his churning shoulder blades. His back exploded in a gout of steam. He went sprawling forward, dug a furrow in the dust with his face, and lay still.
Shit, a laser. That shit he's wearing over his shoulders has a power pack in it, I'll just bet.
Impressive.
The rider held up his arm. The column halted. The foot soldiers winged out to the building fronts to either side and lay or crouched, covering the street with their weapons.
Look at that. They got a couple BARs with them. Beautiful.
Serious firepower.
Let's hope they're friendlier than they look.
If they're not, I'm not sure what we can do about it.
Two soldiers came forward, prodding two captives in front of them with the muzzles of their long blasters. The prisoners, a man and a mutie covered all over in curly golden fur, wore only loincloths. Their arms were bound behind them. One of their escorts leaned forward and apparently cut their bonds, because the two immediately brought their hands up in front of them and began massaging their wrists. The boy in the feathers dropped his kickstand, swung off his bike, stalked up to the prisoners like a leopard. He was carrying a peculiar-looking weapon in his hand, a flat wooden club, maybe 2 feet long, that had pieces of obsidian set in either edge to create a discontinuous double blade of black glass. He snapped a question. The human captive turned his face away. The warrior in the feathered headdress lashed out with the obsidian-lined club. The furry mutant's right arm leapt away from its shoulder in a gush of blood. He dropped to his knees and grabbed the great wound, blood spurting between his fingers.
Dark Knight, these are some hard bastards.
The human captive said something to the warrior. The warrior danced a couple of steps to the side, struck down with his weapon. The screaming mutie's head fell away from its neck. It bounced twice on the road and came to rest face down in a rut. Then the blood flow ceased. The headless, one-armed body pitched forward to leak slowly into the dust. The human captive pointed straight at the garage where the travelers and their vehicle were hidden. The feathered warrior turned to study the structure. Then he lashed out backhand. The human captive's head jumped off his shoulders. Without ever looking back, the warrior stalked back to his ride, forked it, and kicked it into snarling life. The cavalcade rumbled into motion again, right for the companions.
I don't know about you, but I got a bad feeling about this.
Get into the wag! Get ready to roll!
Where to?
Away.
The truck with the big Browning stayed where it was to provide a fire base. Its thumb-thick bullets would punch through the Hummer like hand blaster slugs through wet paper. The foot soldiers came trotting down the street and took up positions across from the garage, covering the double doors with their long blasters. A BAR man was winged out to either side on his belly, with his weapons bipod down.
Them suckers are toting FNFALs and M1 Garands, and they pack a punch.
Then there's that wrist laser.
The strapping young warrior in the feathered headdress had been holding back, waiting for his minions to get into position. Then he gunned his V-twin engine, streaked forward down the street, and threw the bike into a dust-raising sidewise skid that brought it to a perfect halt facing the garage doors. He gazed up with a haughty expression on his aquiline features and barked something.
Tiran sus armas y rindas ahora mismo.
What's he say?
Beats me. Sounds like he means it, though.
I say, Ryan, but yonder fine young bravo has just called upon us
throw
to relinquish
out your weapons
our
and give up at once.
Huh. English?
Sure sounds like it.
Ryan let his Steyr sling strap slide off his shoulder and laid the rifle carefully on the rooftop. Then he stood. 2 dozen rifle barrels tracked him.
We're peaceful travelers! Traitors! We're not looking for trouble! We just got caught here by the raiders!
If you wish no trouble, then surrender now before I lose patience.
Who are you?
I am Two Arrow of the Eagle Knights. I serve Don Hector, ruler of the Valley of the Anahuac.
Sick men. Fancy drag, fancy blasters, just lousy sick men.
Why do you wish to make us prisoners? All we want to do is trade, or barring that, be on our way.
You travel these lands without permission. How do we know you are who you say? Now, throw your weapons out quickly, or we will come and take them.
Ryan held up his hand.
I have to talk to my people. Just give me a moment, please.
Before the warrior in the gaudy headdress could refuse, Ryan hunkered out of sight.
What do you say, JB?
I don't know. I don't trust these bastards as far as I can pitch that wag with the M2.
That's two of us, but what are our options?
Well, the way I see it, we're outmanned and definitely outgunned. So our choices would seem to be surrender and take our chances with these sweethearts, fight until they blast us down.
Holy shit.
Or I was gonna say divine intervention, except unbeliever that I am, I didn't expect it to actually happen.
What the hell's going on?
Ryan peered over the parapet. The street below had emptied miraculously. Apparently not even the haughty Two Arrow was above scooting for cover with rockets dropping at random into the ville. Ryan snatched up his Steyr.
Hatch, move!
I'm way ahead of you.
JB was scuttling for the open hatch in a high-speed duck walk, clamping his fedora onto his head with one hand. He dove down the hole into darkness, and Ryan followed. The armorer was perched on the Hummer's rear bumper. Ryan dropped down beside him. There were faces full of almost comical surprise turned back toward them.
What the
Just
hell
drive,
you-
Millie! Out the doors and cut it left!
Mildred asked no more questions. With the two men clinging to the rear of the WAG like baby possums, she slammed the accelerator home. Fuse from the nuke battery surged into the engine. The big Hummer shot forward as if launched from a crossbow. It smashed the doors out of its way with a screeching of splintering wood. Thick wood claws raked Ryan and JB. But they held on grimly. No sooner had the WAG cleared the garage than Mildred turned hard left. The Hummer heeled over on its suspension. It fishtailed, slamming its right rear bumper against the house opposite.
Damn it!
JB's hands were torn from their purchase on the Hummer's rear hatch, but Ryan caught him by the back of his leather jacket. Then the WAG's cleated tires grabbed the rutted road and it lurched forward. The big machine gun bucked and roared, pushing the heavy truck back to squat on its rear suspension. The 700 grain 50 caliber bullets sprayed the street at random, knocking loose vast chunks of facades, turning whole adobe bricks into gouts of khaki powder.
Damn, that's one hell of a gun. I know JB wants one of those.
Mildred didn't need the splitting earth roar of the big 50 caliber weapon to remind her of the fix they were in. At the first opening she thought possibly wide enough to pass the Hummer, she cranked left again between blocky houses. The WAG fishtailed right, then left, banging off the mud-brick buildings in showers of chips and dust, and making JB, who now had both hands holding on again, and Ryan wave from side to side with their feet streaming out like pennants in the WAG's wake. A wall in the way was bulldozed into dust and flying chunks. Then the Hummer was clear, jouncing across a field of half-ripened beans as first JB and then Ryan scaled the back and clambered monkey fashion across the torn-up roof to drop down the pintle mount hole into the passenger seat. Nobody pursued them from the village.